This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1970, Richard Nixon was in the White House. The floppy disk was invented. A U.S. postage stamp cost 6 cents. And Nancy Faust commenced her career with the Chicago White Sox.
Hello again, everybody. Harry Carey from Comiskey Park. It's Nancy Faust night. And the weatherman has proven that he is a Nancy Faust fan, too, because this is the best weather we've had since the baseball season opened.
So let's go to the PA and enjoy Take Me Out to the Ball Game with Dennis DeYoung.
Nancy!
Oh, is that Nancy Faust?
It is. Sure.
Nancy was...
What a wonderful gal.
She was. Great gal. She was here a long time with the White Sox, but I don't know how we got on that cover. I don't know what it was.
Dubbed baseball's best organist by Sports Illustrated, she was famous for punctuating the game and opposing player at bat music with personal and witty melodic interludes while entertaining millions of fans.
Nancy really contributed to the festive atmosphere at Old Comiskey Park. I mean, think about it. She invented "Nah, nah, hey, hey, goodbye" as a "see you later" to an opponent.
She's a Chicago legend, let's face it.
She did the Harold.
By the way, Dick Allen was her favorite player, and when he came up to bat, she would play Jesus Christ Superstar, which is exactly what he was, a superstar.
She's such a wonderful woman and beloved by White Sox fans.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
No doubt about it, one of the musical soundtracks to multiple generations of White Sox fans is Nancy Faust playing the organ at a game, whether we're talking about player walk-ups or during rain delays. Nancy was there for White Sox fans, and now she's going to be back on Sunday, starting this Sunday over at 35th and Shields, and we could not be happier to have Nancy with us here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Nancy, thanks so much for joining us. We truly appreciate it.
Well, that was quite a compilation. I'd forgotten about so many of those wonderful words, and how did you do that?
Our guy Chris Tannehill, Nancy, lifelong White Sox fan and sound archivist, worked on that with love. That's for sure.
Well, that had to take him a month to compile all that. Thank you very much. Boy, you just made my head explode.
Oh, it's awesome. Nancy Faust with me, Matt Spiegel, and with Lawrence Holmes. What a pleasure it is, and what a pleasure it was to read this news, Nancy. 41 years with the White Sox, but then 15 years away, 15 years in the making. And here
that
it
is, right?
And so here it is happening. Like, had you lost hope that it was going to happen? And how did you feel when you realized you're going to get a chance to come back and do these six Sundays?
Oh, I felt every emotion imaginable, Matt and Lawrence. I'd kind of given up going back. I'd been doing some minor league games, but I just felt that my time at the majors was beyond gone. So when I got the call, I was just elated, And of all things, it's on Mother's Day, and I'm excited that it's actually the same year that Dick Allen will be inducted into the Hall of Fame. I championed for that for a few years now, and so all the stars aligned, and I'm just, I'm ecstatic. Well, actually, and I went to the game, to the ballpark today, brought my equipment there. We had a sound check, and oh, gosh, the sound system is just as good as imaginable. It's wonderful. So I felt right at home. It was almost as though I hadn't left by the time I finished my, I've done about a dozen songs today.
You were, one of the things you said was on a list of questions that I had for you, because you're right. You were one of the biggest advocates for Dick Allen getting into the Hall of Fame. For you, having your career connected to his career and being a fan of his, how happy are you about it that he finally gets recognized the way he deserved to be?
Well, I've come to realize that not only was he a spectacular player, but such a great human being. And those that really knew him couldn't say enough about him. He was generous and thoughtful and had a lot of pride, and which he certainly did deserve. And I finally met him, maybe 15 years ago when at the ballpark when there was a reception for him. And he just couldn't have been nicer and more gracious. And he acted appreciative of the song that I played for him. It was actually, it was like a knee-jerk reaction when I played Jesus Christ Superstar, because that song was popular when he came up to bat. And he always performed so well that it was just like a no-brainer. And then Sports Illustrated picked up the fact that he had his own song, and that encouraged me to play more special songs for players, and that evolved into what we now call walk-up music. But Dick Allen kind of started it, so he kind of put me on the map, I guess. But nobody like him, and I'm just thrilled for him, and I wish he were here to realize it. But I know his family and friends are equally as ecstatic as I am.
I bet some of our listeners, Nancy, are just putting it together as you're saying it. Now, I want to just go ahead and knock it all the way through here. Nancy Faust invented the walk-up song. So this is the early 70s. She plays Jesus Christ Superstar for Dick Allen, and people catch on. And now, all over sport, every sport, you know, an appropriate song for the hometown player. It's everywhere, and it is a phenomenal and beautiful legacy that you get to share with Dick Allen. I know that you have some friends that are organists in MLB. But you must have heard from all kinds of people. Who do they treat you with the respect you deserve as the innovator of the walk-up song? Is the question.
Well, you know, the term walk-up song wasn't developed until it was the players that selected their songs. And when I did that same thing, it was my choice, and I felt that I was actually playing to amuse and entertain the fans, not so much the players, and I don't think they were even tuned into what I was playing, which was often a good thing. But so things have turned around since then, and now what I do is I play walk-up music for the opposing team, because the home team gets to select their own music. And sometimes it's something you may have never heard. I tried to make it more mainstream, where somebody could actually make a connection between the name, the number, the ethnic group, or whatever, just some kind of a connection, association. I guess it evolved to what you call walk-up music now, but it started, I'd say, with Dick Allen.
How did practice go today?
Good question.
It was glorious. It was glorious. I was a little unnerved when I first sat down, but by the time I was through it, I just felt very comfortable, and I was really encouraged to hear the sound system, because it just sounds so wonderful. Makes me sound so good.
What's the instrument? What are you playing? Is there still an organ there, or did you provide one?
We provide one, because it's what I'm used to using, and it's very much like a Hammond B3, but it's cut down, so it doesn't take so much room. But you get the same effect as you would with a Hammond B3. I have lots of pedals and two full keyboards, and I use a sequencer, which I've put background music into, so I can play along with myself, and it enhances what I sound like. And I also have an automatic drum now. These are things I didn't have when I started back in 1970.
Amazing. Nancy Faust with us here on Spiegel and Holmes on The Score. Lawrence, I have three musical friends in Chicago, Max Crawford, Gerald Dowd, Kelly Hogan, who, when Josh Cantor, the organist at Fenway Park, the Red Sox organist who grew up idolizing Nancy Faust, found out Nancy was selling her practice organ, he bought it.
That's right.
And then his friends picked up the organ and drove it to Boston. And they documented, they called it the Great American Organ Transplant. They stopped in Cooperstown, where the Hall of Fame welcomed them with Nancy Faust's practice organ. And I was there the day it got delivered into Josh Cantor's house, Nancy.
Is that a fact?
So that your legacy is directly connected to one of the finest active organists in Major League Baseball. He still has your practice organ, and I think he uses it all the time. It's amazing.
Oh, that's so great to hear. He's a great guy, and he's very talented, and he's also a music, and he's got an encyclopedic brain in terms of, putting the artist with the song. He's just really, there's nobody like him. And
he takes requests every night.
He wanted the organ. He is a Chicagoan originally.
Yes.
Of course, now he's in, there he is in Boston. But
he takes requests every night, Nancy, on Twitter. It's like, but there's only, I think there's only 10 or 11 teams that use an organist these days. Why don't more teams use an organist these days?
Well, you've got to find somebody that can execute. You know, if you have to refer to organ music, or if you have to refer to any kind of music, there, you know, you're dead because there's no time. The game has been sped up so much. So that's part of the problem. I think so many musicians like to have music for everything, and it's hard to be spontaneous that way. I guess they're doing quite well without, but I do know that those that are active are making quite an impact. So that's great. I know we've got the organist in Atlanta and the Dodgers and Diamondbacks, and it's good to know that there can be a place if they do it well.
Nancy, how did you figure out that you could marry these two passions, baseball and music?
That was just an accident because I really I didn't grow up in a sports-oriented family. We had never been to ball games or anything like that. My mother was a musician, and I just filled in at playing at a luncheon that was attended by Stu Holcomb, who was the general manager of the White Sox, and that was back in probably 69 or 70. Well, 70 was my first year, so it might have been early 70. And so he attended this luncheon, and he heard me, and evidently they were ready to make a change for their organist because they had a fella there that had been there several years. Now, the original organist at the ballpark was hired by Bill Veeck in 1960, and then around in 1967, he moved down to California, and he ended his career he played out there for many years for the Angels. His name was Shea Torrent. He was really good. But anyhow, then somebody followed him, and the Sox must have been ready to make a move, and they heard me play and offered me the job after I expressed interest.
When you get that opportunity, like, do you even have a sense of what it is when you're not around it all the time? Like, what did they say they wanted you to do?
Play the national anthem. That was before we had guest singers, and play Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and Occasional Charge. And I remember my mom saying, now they say when they take a pitcher out, they're going to the shower. So you have to play April Showers. So I did that. But it kind of grew from there because nowadays you have social media with a cast of thousands giving you great ideas. But because the organ was located among the among the fans who were so knowledgeable, I gained a lot of insight and good ideas. I could execute if they could just give me the name of a song. And it was just a good marriage between the fans and myself. The fact that I was outside, that was Bill Veeck's idea. And it was a great marriage.
And your remarkable musical brain to think of stuff and do it on the fly and the courage to do it. So April Showers was for when the home team had a pitching change?
No.
Okay. Because when did you start doing na 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 hey hey goodbye when the opposing team had a pitching change?
Well, that just kind of that just happened too. It's nothing planned. I actually started playing that around the same time that 1977, when I thought that would be a good song because I knew the words goodbye were in it, and I thought, oh, if Posen hit or struck out, that goodbye is a good song to play. So I actually played it for just a strikeout. But when I did play it, when a pitcher was removed and we were playing Kansas City and vying for first place, the fans were electric and they were just there to chime in. And I remember walking through the Bards room after the game and the press saying to me, what was that that you played that everybody's saying? All I knew was that the word goodbye was in it. And I said, oh, the name of that song is Sha-na-na, Sha-na-na, goodbye. So that's how little I knew about the song, but I had a good lyric, and that was goodbye. But it held because, I mean, it was pretty sensational to hear everybody singing. In those days, the only thing they sang was take me out to the ballgame. So it became our anthem for quite a number of years.
Nancy, I got to tell you that, like, and I'm not a musician, so you can help me with this, but hearing the first four notes of that is something that is forever stuck in my head.
Do, 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 do.
The walk of no. The do, 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 do.
Ah.
That, like yeah, hearing that.
That's about as original. That's about as original as I can get for an introduction. Four notes. Don't, don't, don't.
I love that. It is, as a fan, it's stuck in my head. It's a call to arms for what's getting ready to happen. You know what I mean? Like, I love that.
Yes, I do. Yeah, everybody needs an introduction. So everything, yeah, the call to arms. I love that. Thank you.
Nancy Faust is living, breathing White Sox history. 41 years of the ballpark, and now back for six Sundays, beginning this Sunday, which is Mother's Day. Is the story true that the only games you ever missed were because of the birth of your child?
Right. In fact, I brought him. We brought him home from the hospital on Mother's Day. That was May 6th. Today is his birthday, as a matter of fact. But he was born, he was May 6th. And then the Sox went out of town. They were on the road for maybe a week or 10 days after that. So I stayed home for a while, for a week. And when the Sox returned, I was ready to go back to work. It's not even work. It's a party. You know, I was happy to return to the party. So, that's how that all happened.
Oh, yes.
Those are the only games I missed, over 3,000 of them.
Over 3,000 games, those are the only ones you missed. I mean,
that yeah, Iron Woman streak is strong.
Yeah, she's the Lou Gehrig of White Sox organism. I mean, that's unbelievable. But you said it's a party. Like, when you were outside and you were, because you were in a couple different spots, but you were in the outfield for a while, right? I remember you and Harry being out there together.
That's where the organ was first placed when Bill Veeck introduced an organ at the park. He's placed it in the center field bleachers, and it had somewhat of a tent out there, but there was very few people out there. Well, particularly that first year, I think they had maybe the lowest attendance ever. So that's where a good place for me to get my start. And then Harry came the second year and said, you ought to bring her in where she's closer to the fans. So in 1972, I was moved from the center field bleachers to directly behind home plate. And that is also the year that Dick Allen joined the team. So it was just a great time to be among fans. And I was feeling very comfortable by then. And I was getting good feedback and everything. I knew I was on top of the world. I knew I had the best job in the world.
Did fans?
It's not a job. It was an assignment that was just perfect.
Did fans? Were they able to get close enough? Did they put beers on the organ? Did they spill beers on the organ ever?
No, but they were very close, you know. But we never had a problem, you know. I remember an Andy Frayn usher standing near me, but it wasn't necessary. Everybody was just having a good time. I mean, it was just a grand party. So,
Nancy, what does it mean wonderful. To you? Like you have connected so many generations of White Sox fans, and you know, I'm getting ready to turn 50, but you've been gone so long that this now gives you an opportunity to reach a couple new generations of fans. So for you, being able to connect all of that history back to 1970 to now 2025 and the young people that are going to be there on Sunday that have the chance to experience, you sharing your art and your craft. What does it mean to you to be put in this position?
I realize that there might be almost a whole generation of fans that haven't experienced live organ music at a game, but I expect that they'll be there with their parents or their grandparents who did experience me, and it's something for them to share. It's something for the dad to say, oh, that's the song, or that's why she played that, and this is how it was when I was young and when I was your age. So I think there will be a lot to share among the generations if these kids are there. And I hope I can connect in some way. I have learned some songs that they may know. I'm going to learn my Pink Pony Club. I understand it's very popular. I'm Dua Lipa or whoever she is. I do a song by her. Taylor Swift, Kendrick Lamar, Billie Eilish. So I've incorporated some songs that I think will be familiar.
Oh, what a fantastic thing.
Like,
yeah, what a fantastic thing for you as an artist to learn new stuff and mix it in. What a thrill.
Not Like Us is perfect for the organ. By Kendrick Lamar?
Yeah, I think it is. Well, before that, I could play The Times They Are A-Changin', because, boy, what a contrast in music. And I could do it, both of them. A medley, perhaps.
That's phenomenal. But seriously, from an artistic perspective, a musical perspective, and really just an improvisation perspective, the art of you thinking of a song and playing it is a tremendous thing for kids and young musicians to realize is possible. You know, it's like, what a beautiful artistic sensibility for them to experience. That's going to be the big benefit that maybe the White Sox don't even realize, and having you back is like, all those young fans are going to feel something, and they're going to know that it's special, and it's going to connect with them like you always have.
Well, thank you. I certainly hope that all comes to pass. So thank you very much. I like that.
Yeah. Did you, can you tell people, you mentioned Bill Veeck. Bill Veeck brought an animal to the park that you eventually took home. Is that correct? Can you share that story?
Yeah. In fact, well, as I was waiting for your call, guess what I was doing? Just cleaning a water bucket. But so one of Bill's many promotions was called Ragtime Night. And one of his door prizes, Ragtime Night, besides an old Model T car and an old piano, was they marched this, they paraded a donkey out into the field. And it was a door prize that wasn't claimed. And it had been donated by, one of the amusement parks, I think. Probably it would have been returned. But rather than return, I asked Bill if I could keep it. And he said, sure. So I brought it home to be company for a horse that I had. So that started my romance with donkeys, and I still have two, but not the original ones, but I do have two donkeys.
You continue to have donkeys and keep them because you took one home from Bill Veeck. You're living history. It's unbelievable.
That's the start. He really changed my life in that way, because it takes a lot of time and dedication, but I have a passion about it, and I love the animals. And my latest acquisition was just rounded up by the Bureau of Land Management in Arizona, and because they want to clear the lands, the government lands, of all the equine. And I got wind that this animal was young and tame enough. So that's my latest donkey. And his name is Jackpot, because we feel that we hit the jackpot when we found him.
That is awesome. Nancy, thank you for your time. We truly appreciate you, and we wanted to share that. And hopefully we have shared how much White Sox fans and baseball fans and Chicagoans absolutely love you. This is a brilliant idea by the White Sox. I love that they're doing this. I love that you get to share your art with everyone again. And thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time.
Well, thank you for such kindness and such kind words. And I look forward to seeing you at the park, and both of you, and meeting up with people that I haven't seen for 15 years. Sunday.
It's the best. I know
and
a lot.
Happy Mother's Day to everybody listening that's not a father.
right back at you.
Nancy, thank you. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and we can't wait for Sunday.
Too.
Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you so much.
You got it.
You guys take it easy. Thank you.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Go ahead, listeners. Get that stirred up.
All right. Well, it's definitely stirred up now. You know, you're on the...
He's the best.
I don't know. Nobody listens to me. That's fine.
But, this is the most popular radio show in Chicago.
Well, so. I know. Okay. You said it, Lawrence, not me, but...
We'll send you the book.
Yeah, send me the book.
Afternoons on the Score.
We'll build restrooms. We'll make this a place that people want to come and spend time.
Thank God restrooms were part of the plan.
Restrooms are important.
Of the On the Lake football stadium that Kevin Warren told us he was going to try and build with the help of the mayor.
I don't think that's happening.
Doesn't appear to be happening.
I think what's happening is the thing that most of us thought was going to happen. You know, when they bought 326 acres of property for $200 million, that they would just build on that property.
I'm told that Kevin Warren legit fell in love with the idea of the lakefront and used that to try and further the thing. And then it did turn into the leverage situation, the Chicago leverage. And they've gotten a couple things from Arlington Heights, but they haven't gotten maybe some of the other things they want. Like, they're not all the way there at Arlington Heights.
I think they're as close as they've been to a decision. And now there's a new mayor who was sworn in yesterday, Jimmy T, James Tenaglia, and I didn't know this, architect by trade.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Good old Jimmy T. I was in a band with a guy named Jimmy T.
Was it this guy?
I don't believe
Jimmy T
so.
Is also in a band, by the way.
Is he really?
He is. Yes.
No,
I think he plays like Metallica covers and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
but
no.
He's in a band.
Wow. That's amazing. No, my Jimmy T is, I think he's still over at the Old Town School of Folk Music. But there's a different Jimmy T. So Jimmy, not my Jimmy T, in a band, but also the mayor of Arlington Heights, back to where you were going.
And he said, the common goals are win-win. Win-win meaning the Bears. I know the Bears have to have a good solution. Otherwise, they're not going to come. He said, but they have to know that our residents need a good solution. Otherwise, we can't let them come. Number one, the development has to be safe. It has to be really well thought out. So safety is paramount. So this is interesting because this is someone who has a background in this. And he also pointed out, third, traffic has to be really well thought out and controlled. We can't have our neighborhoods wrecked because traffic wasn't thought out well enough. And fourth, the infrastructure, whether that's stormwater management and roads and everything else, fire, police, all of those things have to be well thought out.
Good.
Close quote. That's why the Tribune, in a story they did, seemed to intimate that the earliest the shovels could go in the ground is 2026.
That is
there's
not
still a lot of stuff.
Lawrence, I'm sorry. But you know, Kevin Warren said 2025. He's been promising shovels in the ground in 2025.
I know that's what he said.
Yeah. So that's what he's going to do. Because
they own the land. I guess he could just go put a shovel in the ground there.
Yeah, to build like something small, like a restroom.
Or just to do it. This is where we're going to put this porta potty.
I told you our shovels would be in the ground, and they are. Granted, this is just for a little two-car park while we're doing all the other stuff. Well, I mean, good for the mayor, because I'm sure he ran on some of this stuff, and now as the mayor, you should make sure, like, cover your community's backside.
100%. Here's what I thought was interesting from the Tribune piece. He was, as an architect, was talking about Kansas City. And he was talking about where the Royals play and where the Chiefs play. Even though that is under dispute, they would like a new stadium. And the taxpayers told them no. They told Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and those Super Bowl rings no. On the Missouri side, there is some thought that they will move over to the Kansas side, but I digress. He said about those two stadiums, pick those up and carry them over here to Arlington Heights. Those two stadiums fit inside the racetrack. Now the racetrack over there is just a little tiny piece of 326 acres. Close quote.
So now, you know what's going to happen?
The Arlington Heights White Sox.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Why not?
I think the White Sox want to be and they want to end up on the 78, and I think they're going to. What they will now do, though, is use the relationship they have forged a little bit with the Bears as they were trying to get state money to maybe do something together on the lakefront or what have you, and they will use Arlington Heights as leverage to try and get anything else that they need to get from the 78.
But that's the Bears' land.
sure. So they maybe the Bears will do them a solid in some way and like let them or just let this possibility exist out there.
I don't think that there's anything wrong with them actually moving to Arlington Heights if it gets them what they want.
Yeah, I think.
And having an entertainment district up there in Arlington Heights.
This is going
over to Sham Vegas while you're there.
Jerry Reinsdorf wants to leave the White Sox in a better place than when he got him on the south side where he should have built the stadium 30 some years ago. And I think he's going to get his way. I think
he has to go back.
I think he's eventually going to get the Sox in the
78. Why do you think that?
Because I think it is a really good use of that land that they have not been able to figure out exactly how it could be. And I think that it makes much more sense than redoing anything on the lakefront. And I think that eventually the new owners, the Ishbias, are going to put in whatever money they need to do to make that the case, because that's what they will want as well.
Okay.
That's what they will want as well, is to be a near Southside team as opposed to a entrenched Southside team.
I'm not certain that that matters.
In terms of what the Ishbias want, I think it will matter because they're going to put their money towards it, and they're going to work together as they transfer ownership to get the stadium to happen.
What I'm saying is, I'm not sure that the connection to the South Side matters to the Ishbias
the
way that it might to the Reinsdorfs.
That's fair. That is fair.
And maybe if you're the White Sox and you can team up with the Bears, you go to the governor and you go to the assembly and go, we're going to build this thing. I thought it was really interesting that Jimmy T even brought that up. The idea of, look at Kansas City. We could take those two ballparks and drop them right into Arlington Racetrack. Sure could. You could drop two different sports stadiums in there if you want it to.
And that's a very convenient way to do it, and a really an easier sell probably for both of them to sell the state in terms of money and infrastructure. Like, look at this. We're going to create a district out here, and it's going to be great for the entire burbs. I hear you.
I actually really like this idea from the texter of like, hey, the Bears move out. Why don't the White Sox just move into Soldier Field? The conversion would take a lot, and they already have a ballpark that's like 3 minutes away from Soldier Field. But I get what you're saying. You're trying to fix a problem. But to me, I think the problem is that the people involved with the White Sox don't necessarily feel like they can generate enough revenue where they're at. I disagree with them.
But they are firmly in belief of that, that 35th and Shields is dead as a new option, as a continuing option.
Correct.
I think that the situations are going to be the two that we're talking about. The 78, which Jerry, I think, still wants, and we'll see if the Ishbias want it or not.
I'm concerned.
And then this Arlington Heights shared space.
With the 78 thing, I'm concerned that there won't be any room left by the time the White Sox would get something approved. That land is very valuable. And every developer is like, oh, well, we have to wait on this White Sox thing. Why don't we just build on this beautiful riverfront property that we have?
I hear you, but that has gone undeveloped for a good long while now.
It has.
When it has been ripe for such things. And so this is when you talk to people through back channels and try to keep any other deals from happening until your deal gets approved or not.
How far down the list, though, are the White Sox if you're the assembly? And their on the field reputation doesn't help at all.
No, it does not. But Jerry has gotten things done for a lot of years.
He has, but that was a long time ago when the political landscape was very, very different. And the governor was a White Sox fan. And the Speaker of the House was a White Sox fan. And people who apparently are able to move clocks were White Sox fans. It's like, oh,
that was a long time ago.
No. It's 11:55. Uh-huh. Watch this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, like, I've talked to folks in a couple different sectors who still have a lot of respect for Jerry and what he's going to try to get done. But the on-field thing is a disaster, and he's now towards the end, and the kids want to get out, and everybody knows it. So Jerry may not have the strength of will to get what he wants to happen. I'm just speaking for what I know he wants to happen. I know that.
We'll see. I think it's interesting that Jimmy T just dropped that line on us, though.
Gotta find my guy, Jimmy T. Gotta find where
he is. What if it was ends the same up one? Being the same guy? Well,
then we've got an in with the Arlington Heights mayor. Then we'll do a weekly.
We fear change.
Yeah, we'll do a weekly with the Arlington Heights mayor until this thing gets resolved then. We'll work on that.
Excellent.
When we come back, I'm going to explain Steiner math to Spiegs. You don't want to miss it. It's next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Hi, Boog.
We're a very important radio show, you know?
Yeah, you are. So very important.
I mean, do people have any idea?
That was my sincerity there. You want me another reading of that?
Yeah.
I'm going to count you down, okay? One more. In three, two, one.
So very important.
Oh, perfect. That feels nice.
Yeah.
Afternoons on The Score.
But then you take my 75% chance of winning if we used to go one-on-one and then add 66 2/3%, I got 141 2/3% chance of winning at sacrifice.
We'll get back to that in a second. If you missed our conversations with Nico Horner and Carter Hawkins and Nancy Faust, you can go back and listen to them with the Rewind feature, something you can only do in the Odyssey app. Search 670 The Score and tap earlier today to get started. Spiegs had brought up the idea, the really ridiculous conversation that's going on the interwebs about 100 men versus a silverback gorilla.
Yeah, 100 men versus a silverback gorilla. And, of course, the baseball varietal, which I adore, 100 Zimmers against a Pedro Martinez, a single Pedro against 100 Zimmers.
So, you know, if you want to try and figure it out, one only need to go to Scott Steiner, Big Papa Pump himself, to explain how some of this math would work. And this is just a three-way match between three men that he's talking about. But if you want to be on team man for this, maybe Scott Steiner can help you figure out a way to do it.
Scott Steiner, it's going to be a three-way for the TNA heavyweight title at Sacrifice between you, Kurt Angle, and Samoa Joe. Now, before you get there, you have an important step tonight as you and X-Division champion Petey Williams take on the unlikely duo of Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe.
You know, they say all men are created equal, but you look at me and you look at Small Joe, and you can see that statement is not true. See, normally if you go one-on-one with another wrestler, you got a 50-50 chance of winning. But I'm a genetic freak, and I'm not normal. So you got a 25% at best at beating me. And then you add Kurt Angle to the mix.
Stick with it, Speaks.
Your chances of winning drastically go down. See, the three-way at Sacrifice, you got a 33 1/3 chance of winning. But I got a 66 2/3 chance of winning because Kurt Angle knows he can't beat me and he's not even going to try. So Samoa Joe, you take your 33 1/3 chance minus my 25% chance and you got an 8 1/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice. But then you take my 75% chance of winning if we used to go one-on-one and then add 66 2/3%. I got 141 2/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice. See, Joe, the numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster for you at Sacrifice. See, but I'm going to break it down for all you ladies. Would you rather be with me, or would you rather be with Joe?
Well, I think Joe's kind of nice. I mean, you know.
See, you're one of those girls that like romance. I'm going to talk to all my freaks out there. Would you rather come home to me, a genetic freak, to be satisfied every night, or go home to that fat-ass Small Joe?
Oh, God.
See, tonight, we're going to win, and I'm going to be the world champion at Sacrifice. Come on, P, let's go.
Scotty, just like you always say, Big Papa Pump has got your hookup. Well, Maple Leaf Muscle is who you need to look up. Holler if you hear that.
Oh, my God.
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
So does he know he's an idiot? Is he, like, willingly being an idiot?
First of all, how dare
you? Did he just get there by happenstance to the land of idiocy?
That math checks out.
So that has become a thing. So whenever you say Steiner math or other people say, they're referring to that moment.
They're referring to that promo.
Math jumped the shark. Like, math is done now. We don't need to ever live with anything in the math sense anymore.
I think that you should hire Scott Steiner to be Ruben's math tutor with that type of math.
Ruben just had a math club competition, which I'm told was a stone cold gas.
You know why? Studying Steiner math. That's why. That's what gets you to the selected enrollment high schools here in Chicago.
Oh,
I tell you
God.
That much.
Oh, that was painful, because he's full of, like, the necessary bluster to do what he's doing, but I thought he was taking himself seriously.
That is very possible.
Okay, well, that's a problem.
I literally, by the way, in the break, got an email from AEW asking about Jon Moxley and Samoa Joe. Like, I was like, this, the universe vibrates at a very interesting frequency.
Oh, God. I'm not going to get those 2 minutes back, am I?
First of all, you were lucky to share those minutes with us, because I tell you what.
What?
You had those 2 minutes to the other 637 minutes of this show. And that's what you got.
Wait a minute, but 60 minutes over a 4 hour period is 240 minus transition.
Kurt Angle knows that he can't beat me. So you take that,
take those minutes
66
out.
And two thirds percent chance.
Look,
and you minus 8 1/3.
I think the Nancy Faust minutes count as double because they were so good. And the Carter Hawkins minutes were pretty damn good in there, too.
I agree.
The Nico Horner minutes.
If you sit 100 Scott Steiners at the Silverback Gorilla.
I'm taking the Gorilla.
Because he is a genetic freak.
Okay.
I don't know if genetics were the only thing at play.
Well, the Silverback. Can I pump the Silverback up with roids? I mean, I don't need to.
Well, Scott Steiner was Big Papa Pump. You'll be doing none of that.
Oh, no, I wouldn't.
Big Papa Pump is your hookup. Holla if you hear me.
Thank you to Alex Kuhn, Sean Sears. Cubs baseball is next. Lawrence is very, very excited that we got Scott Steiner into the show.
It's Scott Steiner.
Scott Steiner into the show.
Steiner math. And you should be excited too. And so should you. And so should you. Or I'm going to send Scott Steiner to your house.
He won't find it.
Wow.
He won't.
I can't wait till he walks through these hallways. I can't wait.
Bring it. Bring it.
Cubs baseball is next.
PCA. PCA.